Well, well, well. Here we go again. It's the Fan Morning Show. Ailish and Justin. I don't even know where we shall begin this evening.
Oh, no!
Wrapping up
we
this morning.
We suck again!
We did. Here we go. What a night, folks. Good morning.
Like, it should have been one of those mornings where... Like, I love our music coming into the show every month. It's always a banger.
It's just been like...
But it should have been a Joe Bowen night. Maybe a CC night. Mm. Like, something out of the gate where it's just like... Some calls, some excitement, because the Leafs just played a playoff game and there has to be something that we can take from it. Something redeeming from a Maple Leafs playoff game. And instead, it's, you know, it's just our common music because the highlights from last night, non-existent.
Unless you're a Tampa Bay Lightning
fan. Unless you're a Tampa Bay Lightning fan, of course.
You're waking up. You're listening to your, whatever, the fan 620 down in Tampa.
Mm-hmm.
They're probably fired up this morning.
Somehow I doubt that this one was like as impactful as it is up here. That might be just, you know, a couple Stanley Cups, a couple Stanley Cup finals appearances. Game one of the playoffs, like, we weren't even sure Tampa was going to show up.
Oh.
We thought, you know, they eased themselves into series. We don't know what sort of team they are anymore.
The switch was flipped.
The switch was flipped. I think this is how we should start. Like, how do we explain what we saw? Why? Because that was a complete no-show and a 7-3 loss. Two goals early on. Two goals scored in the final, 3 seconds of the first and second periods. Why did we see such a blasphemous performance on the part of the Toronto Maple Leafs? There's some options here that I have. Mm-hmm. Are they complacent? That seems crazy, right? Complacency after what we've seen from this team in the playoffs in the last 6-7 years. Nerves? I think there's some merit to nerves.
I could buy nerves.
But let me ask you about nerves. Like, you've been nervous for games before, right?
Yeah, every Stanley Cup playoffs that I started, I was nervous for.
You've played in big hockey games, Ailish?
Yes, there's definitely nerves.
When do nerves, like, actually affect you? Like, do nerves cause you to turn the puck over inside your own blue line if you're Zach Aston-Reese? Like, do they cause you to do things that you shouldn't do?
I think, and we've heard this from some post-game clips already, you just overthink. You're slower to make. You're not reacting. You're thinking. And then you dig deeper in a hole where you make a mistake and then you're thinking about the mistake. Mm-hmm. Then you're thinking about the moment. Then you're thinking about all the situation and everything that's riding on this game. You're hearing the fans. You're seeing the score. You know it starts to pile on. I think that's where nerves can make a difference. I certainly think we saw that early on in the game.
And I think we saw that with Ilya Samsonov.
Mm-hmm.
I think the better... description though would be overwhelmed in that. Like, you're overwhelmed by the moment. You're overwhelmed by, you know, the mistake you just made and you cannot recover from that. I don't know if it's like nerves you feel beforehand, but once you get hit, once you touch the puck for the first time, are you still nervous?
No,
are you still
actively nervous? It's gotta be the first shift or two. That's it. Then you should be.
Like, did nerves prevent Mitch Marner and Austin Matthews from being even a semblance of themselves
I don't put that in the nervous column.
So nerves maybe with Ilya Samsonov. What about, like, being overcoached?
Yeah.
Like, we're thinking about too much. Talked about that with Scotty Barnes early in the year. Like, is he, like, just too much is in his head and can't move forward for that reason? They're not apathetic, right? Like, you can't.
That's inexcusable. None of these are excusable anyway, but that one's, if you're apathetic to the moment, why are you playing hockey for the Toronto Maple Leafs?
Yeah, I mean, I would say so. But again, it will remain head-scratching, right? Like, I think you can get to the nervous point with Ilya Samsonov because he was a shadow of himself, right? He was awful. And that's really the difference in the game. Like, if Zach Aston-Reese turns the puck over and your defensive zone coverage collapses around Ilya Samsonov, if he makes a big save, you know, you're not talking about that turnover. But he just could not come up with a save when he needed to. And the team's poor performance could not be bailed out by the goaltender. And we've heard the nervous discussion from him before. He's talked about it before. I think you can put that. You can put nervousness on the goaltender. The rest of the team, I'm searching for it. I don't know why we saw the performance we saw last night. It was completely and totally inexcusable and honestly pathetic.
You said it right. I think before we came on the show, we were just briefly talking and producer Daniele came in and I said, wow, like I'm surprised. Like, I just can't believe it. And he was like, really? Because like, I feel like I'm not surprised. And it took me a second, but I thought, you're right. Like, why were we surprised? We had kind of been drinking the Kool-Aid a bit. I had believed differently in this team. Mm-hmm. And the point that was made was, why are you, like, you got to see it before you can believe it, right? And I think that I and a lot of people were really excited about the opportunity at hand, starting off home ice, Maple Leafs, a new-looking team, a different vibe. The city was electric. We had everybody that called in yesterday. Yeah, we're cautiously optimistic. We're excited. This is the year. Like, there's so much riding on this team. And to show up and play, I can't even say that they showed up and played. It's like they were physically there in their bodies, but there was no heart, no soul, no desire, no pride to put on that jersey and play in front of thousands and thousands of fans in the arena, outside the arena, in every bar across the city, in every small town and hamlet in Ontario, across the country that love the Maple Leafs. And that's what you play. That's what you perform like. Man, it is. It's embarrassing. It's so inexcusable. And yeah, the moment can be big. This is your, what, 7th, 8th, 10th trip around the same type of moment. How have you not learned? How are we still having John Tavares post game saying, well, yeah, it's a moment for us to learn. Like, we gotta go back and learn. What are we learning here? Like, you should know what to
bring. How have we not learned? How have we not learned by this point?
So that's why when I said I was kind of surprised it went that way, I still think, yeah, there's a surprise at how hilariously bad it went. Mm-hmm. But right, like they proved that they can get through a regular season. They had a historic regular season last year. They had another incredible regular season this year. I guess I just got too excited for game one.
We believe that way because at some point common sense has to prevail. And common sense, really, when you look at this team, like forget tarot readings, forget ghosts and demons and omens and everything else that you could apply to this scenario. They are, on paper, a brilliant hockey team. They have multiple superstars. They have a Conn Smythe Trophy winner. They have, well, maybe their defensive core is not as capable as we thought. But they have everything that you would need. Everything that we saw in the regular season would point to a team that's going to have some success in the Stanley Cup playoffs, or at bare minimum, rise to the occasion even slightly. But they didn't. And now you can just point to the past and all the torture and everything that they've been through and all the scars and how they just can't seem to overcome what is a pressure-packed moment. But the fan thing is really the number one, like, thing that's on my mind because we had the fan experience to a certain point last night. We're in the press box. We're watching the game together. First time we watched a game together all season long.
That's true.
And, we were excited for it. Why wouldn't you be excited for that? And everybody else was excited for it as well. This team, or this fan base, did the same thing. It got sucked in once again. It got sucked in. At the end of last year, we're all like, oh, meaningless regular season ahead. We'll see in the playoffs. Maybe we'll excited. Maybe we won't be excited because you guys continued to do this to us. But over time, that all faded away. It all kind of like got washed away and everyone got excited again. Despite, you know, Austin Matthews not having the season he had last year. Like, that's what carried us through last year. Austin Matthews, 60 goals. That was a lot of fun. This year, yeah, there's some things like Marner, you know, point streak, hooray, and the emergence of Ilya Samsonov and all these other little storylines that were fun. But really what happened was we got, you know, all those negative things got washed away and people got excited again. It was cautious optimism, but it was also real belief. Mm-hmm. There was real, genuine belief. People were fired up. Everybody was ready. Admittedly, a little late, and I was like, well, the vibe's not like crazy out here, but that's probably because I was late and the vibe was great outside the arena. Well before that, everything from a fan perspective was great. They did their job. They believed. They were excited. They gave them a home ice advantage, and immediately the Maple Leafs squandered it because they were so bad early on. And the booing happened to close the first period. That booing was directed to no one but the team, and that booing was completely justified because this team, like you're like a cheating spouse, they just come back, right? They come back every single time, and they get burned every single time, and they look like fools every single time. So that's why they're in their right to boo at the end of 20 minutes. They did it again after 40. Maybe they were booing the referees a little bit too, because I think that was part of the process. But by the time, I don't know, 8 minutes in to the third period, people are streaming for the exits. Fans who spend probably on average over $1,000 per seat leaving the game. Now, I don't feel bad for people who can just, you know, disposable income, $1,000 a game, and just leave. Like, yeah, if you can. But there were probably tons of fans there that shouldn't have spent money on a ticket and did, and that's what they were given. That's what those fans who stuck with this team were given, that sort of effort where there was no chance in the world they were winning that game. I cannot believe the mistreatment of fans by this organization. And it's not Kyle Dubas. What can Kyle Dubas do? He gets mistreated. It's this team. It's this core. It's this group of players that seemingly cannot step up when they have to. They cannot raise to the next level. I've only watched two and a half games of this Stanley Cup playoffs so far. One of them was Florida and Boston. One team that's historically great. One team that's barely could get into the playoffs. We're not very good at all season, but played well enough down the stretch. At least they stepped up enough to make it seem like that was a 50-50 game for most of it. They showed heart, will, determination, some semblance of actual belief in themselves. The Maple Leafs cannot even take it up a half notch. They can't. When have they taken it up a half notch? They cannot raise their game. They cannot go to another level. And that's why they get lapped every single time we play playoff games. Every single time. They have no extra gear. Tampa does. Florida does. Boston does. Pretty much every team we've seen so far. Did not watch Edmonton in LA. But I know their superstars played at a better level. Mitch Marner and Austin Matthews did nothing last night. John Tavares did nothing last night. The only player who played well was Ryan O'Reilly, and that's because he's not associated with what happened before.
And he has a lot of pride to play for that organization since the day he joined at the trade deadline. The guy is a Maple Leaf through and through. And he does not want this to be his story, where he joins his team at the trade deadline, gets put on his hometown adjacent jersey, live out his dream, and play four games against Tampa Bay Lightning in embarrassing fashion and go sign elsewhere.
I would love to know what he's thinking this morning. Last night, even during the game, he was the only guy. He was looking around like, you guys know this is this is the playoffs now, right? Like, he was the only one who took it to a new level. I could not believe. And our vantage point is a little different, and I kind of wish we were able to watch. Like, I think you get something from both, right? You get something from the television broadcast. You get something from being there. He was the only one. It was just so obvious how much everyone else was affected aside from Ryan O'Reilly when you're watching it from the vantage we did.
All right, before we try to unpack a little bit more about our things that we can be mad about, because I think that's a very important reflection piece this morning. It's game one. The Maple Leafs lost in embarrassing fashion. Last year, they won game one in, what's that word that I created again? Exuberant?
Exuberance.
In exuberance. Exuberation. They won.
We felt exuberation
after game one of last year, and look how it went. So yes, it is a long series, hopefully. It is one game. It is a one-game sample size. But I'm going to take that tiny little piece of information and share that with you, but still feel the way I still feel this morning. But we want to make sure that you are aware that at 7:30, we're taking your calls. We decided, you know what? Let's put the fan back in the Fan Morning Show. We want to hear from you. We want to hear the Maple Leafs hotline's going to open at 7:30. We'll take your calls throughout the series. We thought, we're all in this together, you know? We are all a part of this collective fan base and coverage and ups and downs of Maple Leafs land. So we'll have you on the lines today, 7:30 a.m. That'll be at 416-870-0590 or 1-888-666-0590 or *590 on your Rogers cell phone. 7:30, we'll open them up. We'll get to hear from you. Hopefully before then, we can help put some context to the way that we're feeling this morning, because it's easy to come on here and rah, 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 the Leafs blew it. That was embarrassing. And it was. But what are some things that we can legitimately dial in on? Because if it's going to be 5-6 more games, there's certainly points of emphasis that they need to address. That's easily said. But is it doable? Maybe. And maybe I have one or two tiny points that we can be encouraged about.
Okay. You want to start with positivity?
Sure.
I don't know if we should start with positivity.
No, that's unfair. Even for me, that's team vibes. We're not starting with positivity.
I think, okay, yes, it's one game, right?
Yep.
It's one game. But if what affected them mentally played out in real time and affected the performance and the result last night, like how are we supposed to expect this team to recover from that, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, maybe it's better to be chasing in a series a little bit. I've theorized that, you know, maybe it's better to be like a massive underdog. Maybe if they did get Boston in the second round and they're looked at as inferior, that they could be the team that hangs around and is the problem and doesn't feel all that pressure. But now, down 1-0 in the series, yeah, it's a different look because, yeah, they fell behind last, or they were way ahead last year. And, you know, they weren't able to ever follow up that victory with a win. They were never able to put their foot on the throat, no killer instinct whatsoever. Maybe if they lost, like, in overtime or whatever, and they dominated that game, it'd be a little bit better to chase just because they'd be in a different situation and maybe they wouldn't be worried about, hey, we have to finish the job because you're just trying to catch up. But if you look the way that they lost and now looking at game two as an absolute must win, how are those emotions not going to be tenfold? How are you not going to be more nervous? If you're Ilya Samsonov, how are you going to not think about what just happened? I don't know how to answer that question. And again, we've been wrong. We were very, very positive. We thought, like a lot of people, cautious optimism, maybe even beyond that. So maybe we're wrong about that. But anyone who doesn't, like, anyone who can look at this game and look at the what needs to happen objectively, you have to. I don't know how you could not ask yourself how the emotions and the situation is not going to negatively impact game two. I can't see it any other way.
We've got Kipper on at 8. I think he's a perfect guy to ask about this. Sure, I could talk about my playing experience, and so can you, but he's been through it. I think that's the biggest point of worry for me is this starts to snowball. It starts to pile on your shoulders. It's different if it's a team that's happened to once or twice, but the Maple Leafs have this freaky, creepy past, right? Like it's spooky, really. And I cannot think that there's not a level of, here we are again when you look around that room. Anyway, that's hard to quantify, but we will talk to Kipper about that because whatever happened from the end of that game or even in the intermissions, the end of that game until they step on the ice today and have their next skate, that needs to be different than the last 8 times that this has happened to your team. Mm-hmm. You can't be saying the same things. You can't have Captain John Tavares saying, oh yeah, we got to learn from, go back to the drawing board. Like there's something different need to happen between the first period to whenever you step on the ice today. You need to find a way to work through it, to move through it. If that's Ryan O'Reilly's voice, the leader that you brought in, the winner, that's it. Maybe he's the guy that makes this different. But if you do the same thing that you've done in the past, after a loss, after a playoff embarrassment, you're marching yourself to Tampa down 2.
Yeah, I'm not sure how anything, like, listen, words should be impactful that are said privately.
But actions should be more impactful.
But for fans, from a fan standpoint, anything that's said, like last night was just eye roll inducing.
Oh, you mean the post game stuff?
Yeah, John Tavares saying, yeah, we need to learn. Like, come on, like how could you
but he's not the guy that's going to be like, those disgusting performance. I'm embarrassed to be a part of this team. That's not him as a leader.
No, but you know,
I don't expect him to do anything
different.
Maybe
we need better leadership then.
That's certainly something we've brought up before.
It's not like, I don't know, you're pandering to the fans. You want to like, it's PR
no,
after a
and
game.
And I don't know if I would believe it. You know, it's different. When I meant what needs to happen post game till today, I don't need that forward facing. I need that in the locker room.
And you know, we also don't need the story afterwards about how Ryan O'Reilly stepped up and with his words spurred a turnaround, because that's exactly what's going to happen. If they win game two, there's going to be some story written about how someone stepped up in the locker room and said something that turned everything around. Is this team that fragile that motivational speeches constantly have to be the only thing that turns them around?
Maybe.
Maybe, but if that's the truth, then you're not going anywhere, because you only have so many bullets when it comes to motivational speeches from certain members of the team. Whether
I agree.
Mark Giordano stepping up before, or Jason Spezza fighting someone, like at some point the onus is just on you guys.
Well, at some point, the players that you're paying a boatload of money that aren't able to provide that become the significant problem here, and that they become the common denominator of why you cannot get through the first round. We are not there yet. This is game one. Let's talk about game one.
Okay.
Let's talk about things we can be mad about, because I don't think we're there yet.
That's the main emotion, right? Like if you're a fan, anger. And there's a lot of things to be angry about, so let's run through them.
Okay. I think we should start with the big elephant in the room that we've waited 20 minutes to address. Penalties. Refereeing, discipline, lack of discipline. That is certainly one of the major storylines from last night. And I don't like coming on here and ripping refs and ripping calls, but it needs to be discussed that that was a major impact of that game for both teams. But Maple Leafs felt it much more. We tried to write down some of the penalties that caused us to have question, some pause. The referee himself, certainly a question mark from last night. But one of my key, what would we call them, keys to the series yesterday.
Yeah.
I said that win the depth battle, nope. Win the special teams battle, nope. And play with heart and some belief, nope. So they went 0 for 3 on my keys to start the series. Not great. Special teams, though, pretty damn big reason why they lost that game.
Well, both teams went 50% on the power play, so is that considered a wash? Well, no, because you took 8 penalties. And some of them were that you could be, like, really angry about. Like, Luke Shen became the first player in NHL history to get a cross-checking penalty.
With his pinky.
With one hand off his stick.
Yeah, that one sucks. Right? Like, that's not a penalty.
By rule, a cross-check, like, are we looking at definitions? It's two hands to create leverage.
A cross.
A cross, yeah. It's absolutely
so that one was
absurd.
Certainly soft.
And it seemed like, and this is where fans can really be angry, is that it was in direct response to Michael Bunting drawing a penalty himself, with a little collision with Eric Cernak after a whistle, which should have just been ignored, honestly. And it's not because Michael Bunting doesn't deserve the benefit of the doubt. It's because that stuff in playoff hockey should not be, like, there's a different standard. It was prison rules between Florida and Boston the other night.
And then this like, game they was were completely
just,
different.
They were just playing physical. It was different. There was confrontations. And there were penalties. Like, Charlie McAvoy showed up and, like, took a penalty with a late hit after the whistle had already blown. But generally, these players were allowed to be more physical and in each other's faces, and there were different rules, and that's what we expect every time the playoffs roll around.
Just consistency.
Because it gets amped up, and we don't want to see 16 penalties a game.
So the Luke Shen one definitely shouldn't have been a penalty.
Crazy.
The Camp slash,
to questionable. To me, that's a penalty.
He did slash his stick. I just thought, really, like, that's what, if you're going to call every single thing, then call every single thing. And if Camp slashing, tapping his stick on the other player's stick, didn't get him in the hands. Like, I think a slash to me is you slash my hands, not my stick. It's like lifting a stick. It's the same thing, but she slashed it sideways instead of up. Whatever.
If it didn't happen where it happened, I would say no penalty, but it affected a scoring chance.
Sure.
And that's why I think it's a penalty.
The Leafs got kind of an easier one with Bunting getting that penalty, not him, drawing a penalty,
yeah.
And so, yeah, it goes both ways a little bit, but the biggest thing was Bunting's hit, where he's 5 minutes and out of the game, going to have a meeting with the players' department of safety today. I expect, and we've seen some reports, that he'll probably be suspended for at least one playoff game, maybe two.
I'm frankly a little surprised by that. I was a little surprised in the moment. Maybe I didn't see, like, I did see the angles, but I'm, like, cranking my head, looking at a small TV above me.
You weren't the only one cranking your head.
I was a little bit surprised that he was kicked out of the game, honestly. And then I've watched it a little bit more, and I'm like, okay, you deserve to get kicked out of the game. However, do I think he should be suspended? Not really. Like, he basically was suspended one game already, getting kicked out of it and having it affected the way he did. So oftentimes you get kicked out early in the game, that's your one-game suspension. But everybody who knows anything in terms of connections in the hockey world believes he's going to get suspended. And, I mean, we could have the Michael Bunting discussion now, but that could be, like, you know, one of the final chapters for him. Like, he gets two games. I don't even know if he's coming back in the lineup. Like, the trust is completely gone. His impact is completely waned. Whether the officials have any, like, the officials did nothing wrong with Michael Bunting. In fact, he got the benefit of the doubt last night. He drew a penalty, and maybe it was like, oh, what did we just do there? We've got to make this up. And maybe they did that with Luke Shen. But he did what he did. It was insanely stupid, and he deserved what he got, which was a 5-minute major that basically buried the team.
I felt a switch in my perspective of Michael Bunting early on this season. I loved the Michael Bunting story last year. I liked that he was a hometown kid. I thought he was a great addition. He was cheap. I liked his energy brought to this team. Something switched. in my perspective or my heart for him this year, and it has been slowly getting to this point where it is untenable, to use a Justin Cuthbert word. That might be the last time we see Michael Bunting in a Maple Leafs jersey, depending on if he gets suspended or not, because Matthew Knies is going to fill that spot on this roster, and I think he deserves it. I have no level of confidence or no trust in Michael Bunting coming into a playoff game where his emotions take over his decision-making ability. It started to fester, and I remember I looked over at you. I said, look at Bunting. He's out there. He's, like, pushing. He's, like, he was poking the bear a little bit. They were down 2-0 the first period, and there's that one moment in the scrum where he kind of dramatically, you know, pulls in another guy, and I leaned over to you, and I said, I don't know. I'm not liking
it. He was screaming at the officials inside of 10 minutes.
Yes, inside of 10 minutes, and I thought, uh-oh.
And it was what was all about best behavior.
Exactly.
This guy has to be different. And he's screaming at the officials once again inside 10 minutes. And that's why it was shocking to see him get that call. But
the
then they probably checked themselves and they're like, oh, no.
The call on the hit on, it was Eric Cernak, right?
Cernak, yeah.
Completely deserved. I immediately said, nope, that he's out. Like that is a uncalled for, unsafe hit to the head. And he tried to argue that he hit a little bit of the shoulder into the chest area, but I don't care.
And that's another example of like, we've been talking about like faking toughness. Like, are you trying to like just add a tough guy and all of a sudden you're tough? It's just, are you tough or not? And Michael Bunting, I guess, is trying to be physical, but when you are a full foot shorter than Eric Cernak and you probably weigh about 60 pounds less, those are the tactics you got to take. Like you're trying, but you can't even control yourself. You can't control your physicality. You cannot be a force physically because you are not a force physically. So you try and, you know, your little brother, and you go a little bit above and beyond, and you end up hurting your team.
But it didn't even need to happen. That's why I'm frustrated.
Well, he was trying to engage in a battle. He was trying to, like, oh, win body position. But you are, again, so short that you jumped.
It was just reckless. Reckless. Like, you didn't need to do that. You didn't need to put your team in that position. And you're suffering maybe for a game or two suspension. And maybe you don't get back in the lineup in the playoffs. And you're going to be playing for a contract. It might not be with this team anymore. And Matthew Knies, sitting in the stands watching that, welcome to the big leagues because you're playing tomorrow's game.
If there's any positive, the biggest positive is that you get the free roll on Matthew Knies. You don't have to make the decision.
It's made.
The decision was made for you by Michael Bunting. Now you can see it. You don't even have to. You're never questioned if you're Sheldon Keefe because you just got to put him in. And if he plays really, really
well,
silver
lining.
You just stick with it. And again, we might not see Matt or Michael Bunting again based on what he did.
So why would you? So that's my question. Like, okay, let's say he gets suspended for one game. You want to put him back in for game three?
If Matthew Knies plays well, no. But here's the thing. Here's the irony of all that too. Zach Aston-Reese gives up that turnover, which causes the 1-0 goal early on in the game. The entire thing on Matthew Knies was, hey, we don't know.
He might make mistakes.
He might make a mistake in his own zone. Like, we can't trust him. We got to make sure that he knows that, or we have to know that he's not going to make the mistake that kills us. And Zach Aston-Reese does it 90 seconds into the game.
Yeah, I mean, everything ages poorly when nobody performs, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I think that Matthew Knies' door has opened, and he's going to walk through it, and he's going to play his very first playoff game, his very first game at Scotiabank Arena tomorrow night. So,
other things that fans should be mad about.
Yeah, let's move past the penalties.
How about Sheldon Keefe challenging a 5-2 goal?
Yeah, so that's next on the list. That goal in general, I have yet to really see a video. Like, I don't have x-ray vision.
And you could also be mad at, like, how that goal was just...
Oh, yeah.
Like,
that 20
the replay
second,
process...
Yeah.
It was strange, right? And we were trying, like, can we see a view? And we're cranking our head. We're trying to pull up Sportsnet now. We're seeing, like, what is everybody else seeing? The ease in which they were just like, nope, that's a goal. I was stunned. I was like, we're not going to have a war.
They have different eyeballs.
And they showed something in the intermission, and maybe there is conclusive evidence. It just felt like, wow, that moved quick.
I mean, for me, it's like, okay, whatever. If that's a goal, if that's not a goal, I am curious about the Sheldon Keefe decision to challenge.
Well, that's
at
the 5-2.
Thing.
There was a review happening. So Sheldon Keefe and the video team had every chance in the world to look at it. And he did explain post-game, like, if there's a 5% chance, 5 to 10% chance. 5 to 10% chance that it comes back.
Mm-hmm.
Games over 90%. And I guess maybe you're weighing like what the actual odds of the Maple Leafs winning that game were at that time. Like I kind of get it, but the moment we saw the one replay that I'm sure Sheldon Keefe saw and the video team saw, where you see the puck just sitting there, you're allowed to go attack a puck if it's just sitting there,
yep.
Which it was.
Not a goal.
And I have no problem with that being a goal if it crossed the goal line, and I'm still kind of waiting for conclusive evidence on that.
Yeah, the replay added to the general disbelief of how weird things were going that night. You got that goal, you've got the call that doesn't go your way, you've got the ejection, you've got the worst start. The vibe's going downwards, downwards, downwards. But all this being said, we haven't actually talked about the general performance of the players on the ice. Yes, reffing and penalties, that's external enough. If you're playing your ass off and you're trying and you're playing with heart and grit and you show up, like, you can work through those things. It doesn't have to be the way that the game goes, where we're talking about penalties and, you know, the refs out to get you, whatever. You're one player causing a lot of disdain for mm-hmm. Maple Leafs fans. But if you came out there and played hard and showed up in the first 10 minutes of the game, it wouldn't have been 2-0. It wouldn't have been, oh, this feels like it's out of reach. Now we're tightening up. We're gripping our sticks so tight. We have this level of anxiety. The crowd is quiet. Like we're fighting for something. Just play hard from the puck drop and none of this matters.
Mm-hmm.
Who impressed you last night? Minus Ryan O'Reilly.
No one.
Yeah, exactly.
There wasn't, other than Ryan O'Reilly, there wasn't a single strong performance.
You said
Morgan
to me at
Riley
one point,
was the best defenseman by default. He didn't, like, I wasn't like, wow, Morgan Riley, not once. But every other defenseman played horribly.
Mm-hmm.
Horribly. I don't think I've ever seen TJ Brody play that bad.
You, at one point in the first period, I think we were past the 10-minute mark, said, has there been one positive shift yet? And I said, no. Has there been one positive moment for this team? No. You have put so much on your own shoulders coming into this game. Pressure is a privilege.
Mm-hmm.
You have an opportunity to start rewriting the narrative of who this Maple Leafs team is in the postseason. We just talked about the fans and what people give up and what people do to be Maple Leafs fans and how much it means to them. It looked like they didn't give a you-know-what about mm-hmm. that game, and it's too late at that point. And so we can complain all we want about replay and referees and whatever, but it is the players on the ice that did not show up and did not play like they cared whatsoever about that game.
If you're angrier about a challenge call, officiating, the choice of referees,
mm-hmm.
replay, anything, you're more angry about that than the players themselves, then your anger is misplaced.
It's wrong. Sorry.
Because they were awful. And again, everyone, you look around the league, every single team, every single player is raising their level, and somehow the likes of Austin Matthews, Mitch Marner, John Tavares, William Nylander had moments, but William Nylander, they devolve. They shrink.
His goal was sweet.
But William Nylander's, and that's another
thing. And that
thing.
Third goal was absolutely electric.
Yeah,
and nobody was
moments.
There to watch it.
I know, it was a great goal.
Oh my God, that was a hot goal.
People were leaving, and then they score
it's
like
too bad.
Harlem Globetrotter.
It was sick.
7-3
and then
goal.
Like when you're celebrating, when you score your like second or third goal of the game, they all kind of look at each other and like, okay, sick. And they just like skate to center ice.
Though that's,
it's sad.
I think that's a big thing
sad.
Here, is that it was, the game was there. It was 3-2. Mm-hmm. In the second period, despite their brutal start, despite everything in the first period going wrong, despite getting booed, it was 3-2 after William Nylander scored a brilliant power play goal.
Mm-hmm.
After the power play had shown up and answered what Tampa did, going 2-for-2, well, they scored 2 power play goals early on in that second period. And then the sequence of events after that was honestly insane. Like, we had that Jake McCabe hit on Essiemont. I'm not good with that name.
I was hoping we wouldn't have to say
Jake
it.
McCabe.
So you go.
Jake McCabe, I get that people were getting in his face, stopped playing.
Yeah, that was wild.
Stopped, like, he was disconnected.
He was,
controller,
like, at the other
disconnected.
Bench.
At the other bench. I know people were, like, you got to play through it. You have responsibilities. 2-on-1, David Camp takes the penalty immediately. And again, they just made it 3-2. TJ Brody on a routine penalty kill, game's right there. 3-2, mm-hmm. We got to kill off this penalty. Maybe you get momentum from it. You just landed a huge hit. Maybe there's something to build on here. TJ Brodie's does something I've never seen him do, chasing a hit on, in the corner on the penalty kill, basically allowing Braden Point to go to the net unscathed, free, untouched, scores the 4-2 goal. Then immediately after that, you get the bunting match penalty. Then Corey Perry scores on that five. Ugh. Then you challenge, you go down two, and the game...
It all falls apart right there.
...is over because Point scores again to make it 6-2. It fell apart so fast after the Maple Leafs, who did not deserve to be in the game, got themselves back into the game. Like, you had two chances to start over. You had the opening puck drop, and then you had it 3-2, mm-hmm. and everyone failed. Every single player on the roster, save for maybe Ryan O'Reilly, we're Ryan O'Reilly apologists, were brutal.
He deserves it a little bit.
Despite the fact that you got a lifeline handed to you on those on the O'Reilly and Nylander goals.
In my list here are things to be encouraged about. One of them was the way that they used that PK to give some momentum to their team. There was a stretch there where the game got pulled to 3-2. There was an energy back in the crowd. They were riding some momentum, and I thought, okay.
That was when it's 3-0, right? And yeah. They killed a penalty, yeah. And then they got power plays themselves.
Yeah, and yeah. It became 3-2. And that was the best stretch that they played. And if you look forward to, like, okay, we're going to have to flush this game by the end of the show, right? Like, we are going to move on. They're going to have to move on whenever they hit the ice today. But, yeah, there's a lot of crap. But if you look at that five-minute stretch, you can be a better team than Tampa. You have better players. They might have some major injuries, too. We didn't even touch on that. Like, Tampa might be hobbling into Thursday.
Victor Hedman didn't play the final two periods, did he?
Nope. And Chernak doesn't look like he should be playing.
So that was another lifeline.
Yeah.
You were ran out of your
the
own building in the first
over
game.
By then.
No, but Victor Hedman went out early.
Oh, the Hedman, yeah.
And it's 3-2. Like, it was there for the taking.
Anyway, there was that tiny moment where, hey, you can push back. You can find, like, the crowd was, there's three blocks in a row on that PK. Marner took one. I forget who took the other two.
And Justin Hall had one.
It was starting to, there was a momentum building. Go back and watch that five-minute clip today, Maple Leafs, and believe that you can do that for 20, 40, 60 minutes. Very small thing. I will say that gave me some bit of encouragement.
Okay, I'm going to be negative right away again. We haven't talked about Justin Hall, Mark Giordano, the state of that defense corps.
Well, everyone, the whole, anytime the puck went in the Maple Leafs zone, it was bad.
You had fourth lines just like buzzing. A fourth line that performed poorly all year.
Essentially
running free.
Are you surprised?
And doing whatever they want. Like, Mark Giordano's inability to move a body, to box out, I mean, that's what created the deficit. Like, it was a free pass mm-hmm. in and around the blue paint. Like, we talked about how this defense corps is so much better, and yet, like, the real basic defensive things, protecting the front of your own net, went by the wayside immediately. Like, now I'm at the point, like, we're so encouraged, right? Like, you believe in Samsonov. You believe in Jake McCabe. Wow, he steps in for Jake Muzzin perfectly. Now, all of a sudden, I'm looking at the defense corps, like, their line of defense, the goaltending and blue line, and I have zero confidence in any of them.
Okay.
What you have confidence?
No. I think last night sucked.
Like, Giordano looked old and slow and weak. Justin Hall, all the things that we talked about a million times, they all show up mm-hmm. again. Morgan Riley, not impactful. Luke Shen, too slow. TJ Brodie, the one guy we're like,
so do you put Liljegren in then, Justin?
No, because I do think that you should, if you're Sheldon Keefe, go down with the ship to a certain extent. Like, these are the guys you trusted, and if you give up on them, what are you showing your team? Oh, we're like, we're done.
So
you're already waving
the
right flag.
He's in a conundrum right now. This is what's next. Because if you want to switch up the lines, it's game one. You're reacting.
He's got the free line change.
So, yes, he's going to move Nyes in, most likely. Would be surprised if not, if Bunting's out. You're going to be able to do a little bit of tinkering up there. But you also want to show some fortitude yourself that you're not going to blow it all up after one game. But at the same time, you look at that performance, maybe the fact that it sucked from top to bottom is like flush it territory. You know, it wasn't just one line that sucked. It wasn't just like, oh, the core four wasn't working. We need to mix them up. Everything was bad. Maybe there's a tiny little silver lining there that everybody comes to play on Thursday knowing that they can't get much worse, right? Mm-hmm. And maybe it's you go back to the well and you do it all over again on Thursday. But if that fails and you're down 0-2 and you didn't make any significant changes, we come on here on Monday morning with a real, or on Friday morning with a real different vibe than if they go and they do what you don't want them to do, which was one of your three keys, which is like, don't make big changes if you don't need to.
Mm-hmm.
So now he's in a weird boat. Does he make big changes? Does he ride it out? Does he have faith in his guys? Does he believe that that was a crazy blip in the worst game that Maple Leafs have played in playoff history? And do they just come back to it on Thursday?
Well, there's a lot of reasons why I think you have to stay with it. But like, let's say you single out Justin Hall. What are you saying? Everybody else is okay?
No.
It's Justin Hall problem?
That's it. Everybody
sucks. That's an issue, right? And if you take out Justin Hall, you take him out pretty much for the series. Like, how short is that leash, right? Mm. If you put in Liljegren, how much pressure is on Liljegren? How much pressure is on the player that is playing with Timothy Liljegren? I just think your best chance is to just, hey, everyone's pissed off because you, to a man, were all so bad. So you all have to raise your level, and hopefully that gives you a better result. Mm-hmm. I stick with it for one more game. I can't be that hypocritical. I can't go speak out of both sides of my mouth that much. But I actually think there's legitimate reason, even beyond the considerations I had, given the situation. Like, if you knee-jerk right now, you take players out of the series for good, they can't help you again, because how are they going to mentally be able to recover from that? But also, you're letting people off the hook. This is the team that got you to this point. Mm-hmm. This is the team that got you through another really good, the second best regular season franchise history?
Something like that.
Like another great season. You got to trust it. But again, if you're a fan, how could you trust it?
No, it's a tough spot to be in, but you have dug yourself that hole. So you want to earn your keeps as a coach. You want to be the winner of the coaching battle, which has already begun. We already have John Cooper post-game audio about, team's real good over there. Like, never count them out. Like, he plays it so well.
He's got the situation in the palm of his hand right now.
And between the two of them, one of the keys was you need to out-coach the other guy on the bench. And you didn't last night. And you have a huge 24 hours now to decide which direction you're going. And yeah, Matthew Nice is probably an easy thing to slot in there, but how does the rest of it work?
I got one more question before we break for you.
Yeah.
In this era, the Matthews Marner era, is this a Mount Rushmore of playoff disappointment moment? So we've got game 7 losses versus Boston, game 5 loss Columbus.
How many heads are on Mount Rushmore? 4?
4.
No.
Like, this is just one game.
I'm saying no.
I think if they lose, it most certainly is. If they lose this series, it most certainly is for me.
Yeah. 12 hours removed. Without knowing the result of this series, I can say no. Like, I'm actually starting to convince myself that this was so bad of a game that it's almost easier to move on from. Like, it was just an absolute tire fire, a disaster from start to finish. You show up Thursday, can it get much worse? Like, last night mm-hmm. could have been, the only way that last night could have been a worse hockey game is if there was a massive injury to someone on this team. Knock on wood, that didn't happen. You show up Thursday and you're like, hell, we ain't doing that again. Like, that was crazy, right? Like,
yeah, but that scares me too. Like,
yeah.
Oh, we can't be worse. You can be worse if you don't do anything about it.
I don't know, Justin.
I need to listen to the callers
at 7:30. I need to hear from them. It's going to be great.
I cannot wait. But just to run through it, Washington can't be worse. Boston, like, it can't be worse. It was so early on. Game 7, yeah, it's disappointing, but you were in Boston. Game 7's difficult. Columbus. Can't be worse. Your team was objectively bad.
The bubble season with Montreal.
Your team was bad. Your team should have sold at the deadline. Mm-hmm. It was Kyle Dubas' worst team. Montreal next. Yeah, Montreal was pretty bad.
That's on that.
Montreal's Mount Rushmore, but you did get Carey Price.
Yeah. We're not in the Mount Rushmore yet.
And then
pump the brakes.
I think we are, because I haven't named one that's to make people feel as they felt. Nightmarish. Disaster. That's as disastrous in terms of single game disasters in this era. That's one of them for me.
Okay, well, it's a good question to ponder. Well, hey, the text line open all day long, 590-590. We've already got some thoughts getting workshopped in there from our loyal listeners. We're going through it this morning. That's fine because there's at least 3 more games to talk about it. We'll have your calls at 7:30. The lines will be open. You can call us at 416-870-0590 or 1-888-666-0590 or 1-559-*590 on your Rogers cell phone. That's the easiest way. We want to hear your reactions to last night. How are you working through this? Is it the Mount Rushmore of playoff disappointments and recent history. Could be. Get some time to start to put the heads together on that, and maybe you've come to the fact that this was the worst.
And feel free to call me an idiot at 7:30 based on that.
Respectfully. We'll have the radio delay going. It might be a bit spicy this morning.
Can we double that today?
We've got Jeff Merrick joining us at 7, of course. Maybe he'll have some thoughts on the bunting outlook. Nick Kiprios will join us at 8. And, got lots to go through with him. And then we'll have Dan Shulman to wrap up, because the Blue Jays are really good.
A ray of sunshine from Dan.
Chris Bassitt rarely played amazing. We'll get to that. We'll get a little positivity to wrap up the show. We'll do some A-list on the other side of the break. I got some positivity for you as well.
We need it. We definitely need it.
Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Now it's time for the A-list.
Bing bong.
Bing bong.
Bing bong.
What's up, baby?
All right, I'm having a wonderful time reading everybody's texts in the text line at 595.
How is it? What's the pulse?
There's some positivity.
Really?
You have to hit rock bottom before things get better for real. Leafs hit rock bottom last night. They still got this. Dave in Stony Creek. Yes, Dave! I love Dave.
Like, how many rock bottoms?
Buddy, that's what I'm saying. Thursday, can't get much worse.
I suppose not. I mean, maybe it can.
There's a couple good texts, and I will share them with you because I think we need different perspectives and positive spins. But yeah, it's tough to, you got to be creative like Dave.
Or just like very cliche.
All right, let me give you something fun that's coming next year to the Toronto Blue Jays Rogers Centre.
Oh.
It has been just a opening after opening of new bar, new club, new experience, and they're not stopping now. Three new clubs will be introduced to the Rogers Centre next year. This is going to be the hottest.
Like, define club.
They will offer a different experience that caters to various fan interests. Unlike the outfield district with those little bars and, you know, gathering areas, these will be membership based. So they're not ticketed. Like, you can't just, you
Excuse
know.
Me.
Yeah, this is bougie, man. This will be membership based and include private entrances and in-seat dining. Current season ticket members will have first access to joining the clubs. Let me tell you about the said clubs. The Batting Tunnel Club. Behind home plate on the third base side, it will have a sports bar atmosphere and direct views over the home dugout and into the Blue Jays batting cage. Design elements will feature club memorabilia and nods to the greatest moments in franchise history.
There's going to be a restaurant close enough where you can see in the Blue Jays dugout?
Apparently. Let me tell you about club number two.
I can't even imagine that.
The Home Plate Club, directly behind home plate. Duh. It will offer in-the-action seats and an unprecedented culinary experience, the team says. Membership will include access to all three clubs. Finally, the lounge. Behind home plate on the first base side, it will be the largest of the three clubs and have a spot to host guests. The team said it will include an expanded culinary menu, live preparation chef's table, and in-club entertainment from pre to post-game.
Geez, so we thought the ballpark looked different this year. It's going to be completely
bougie.
Like, the television view is going to be completely changed. Like, if there's just clubs behind,
I think they're like kind of. I feel like they're kind of underneath.
Under? So there'll just be seats over.
I think they're kind of underneath.
There's going to have to be some sort of Is it all underneath?
I'm looking at the renderings, and unfortunately, I'm not able to really give you the perspective that you require.
I mean, if they're hiding three clubs underneath the seats at Rogers Centre, like, yeah.
Yeah, I believe they're underneath.
Go on with your bad selves.
They're not going to be out in, like, public.
I don't know. Like, in Cleveland, isn't there, like, what you see behind home plate is, like, kind of, there's, like, a lounge, not lounge, but it's, like, standing area.
No. The organization announced on Tuesday that the next offseason plans will include the addition of these three new premium clubs that will be open for the 2024 campaign. These sections will be built underneath the completely reimagined lower bowl in the private areas behind the home plate, aiming to provide an elevated experience that includes private entrance and in-seat dining. To me, this is like Scotiabank Arena. You know, there's the Sure Club that if you're like one of Drake's homies, you get to go in and it's like exclusive. But that has no view of the game.
So I've this never, is the same thing then?
No, but this will have views somehow. Right. Remember, it was like eye line, you can see
if
out.
If they have views, we have views, don't we?
Maybe it's like that type of glass where you can't look in and only you can look
very
out.
Exclusive, yeah.
Anyway, it sounds pretty cool. I feel like I'll never get to go visit one of these. Only
no,
for the media day that we get invited to.
The only thing I got out of this, like concrete, is that in about 50 weeks, we're going to be going down
there. We get to go in there. We get to pretend, and we'll see you never.
We won't need a membership for at least one day.
Anyway, more to come for Rogers Center renovations. They're doing a lot in the lower or the infield area behind home plate. They're going to do a lot of stuff in terms of player amenities, what goes on that we won't see either, really. We'll get to see the renderings and maybe a tour, but the players will benefit greatly from stage two of the renovations. And maybe if you are connected and bougie, you get to benefit from these new three areas. But they have gone every range of fan or new fan or person that doesn't give a crap about baseball can come to the Rogers Center and find something to do. So they've circled it all. Got to wait another year for that.
So, like, you'll have after hours then, right?
Oh, like, it sounds like it's like legit
like
a club.
2 a.m. every
One
day?
One of those said there's, like entertainment. Like, was there, like, DJ down there?
Hey, yeah, let's do it. Whatever. It's not exactly watching baseball, but the more the merrier.
They have been really showing a lot of Geddy Lee with the Blue Jays this year. You tell me there's a little Geddy Lee performance in one of those lounges.
Yeah, but are they taking away his seats? Like, this is
no,
all...
No, like, he does, like, the post-game party. Sponsored by Geddy Lee.
Perhaps.
All right. Okay, back to hockey. Back to the Maple Leafs.
Back to misery.
No, Jeff's always positive. He's got a spin. He's our Dave in Stony Creek. Jeff Merrick. Let's keep breaking down last night's game. Maple Leafs take an ugly L to start their playoff campaign. Got Jeff Merrick on the other side of the break.